I never got the Dylan thing. I just never did. Bennett hates me for it, and I'm sure Ken Thomas does too. It's Radio Mysterio, so I'm having a horrible allergy attack. I think it's because of the change of the seasons. So, well, Walter's here. Let me start this while he's indisposed.
Interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
Yeah, that crazy season change of when it gets cold here, I'm suddenly sneezing and sniffling like mad. So I'll probably sound like hell through this show. Walter, what do you got there? Oh, it's your phone. It's his secret tracking thing. He's keeping track of everything I do. It's Radio Mysterioso here for the 11-11. It's the 11-11 doorway today on Radio Mysterioso, and I decided to have let the listeners call in. I don't have a guest this week except you guys and Walter. December 9th, Dean Radin will be on the show, and anybody else I can get before then. But I won't be here next week. Walter, what are you looking for? Oh, yeah, a different seat. No, there's just toilet paper. What's over here? Are there any seats over? Oh, there's a folding chair.
Oh, hyphen.
A plastic hygienic folding chair, which I hope isn't broken. Yeah, this seat's nasty, too. I got my hair cut today. I feel like I'm bald.
Yeah, it looks nice and sharp and all neat.
Yeah, good. It's for my trip. People don't know. I think it's the blue lead microphone. Is that one working? Okay, then it must be this one. No, keep that one. Now
hello?
It's on. There
yes.
We go. Because Tuesday, Sigrid and I are going to Japan for 9 days. We're going to go to Kyoto for 4 and then Nagoya for 1 for relatives and then Yokohama for my mom's getting some sort of civic award, which is the main reason we're going. But she thought,
let's
do a whole bunch of other stuff.
That's cool.
What I want to do when we're in Kyoto is go to a temple and do Zazen meditation.
Is this Sigrid's first trip there?
Yes, it is. So she's very excited.
I envy her. First trips to any destination are always awesome.
I still remember when we were flying into Istanbul, I had a really deep emotional reaction when I looked out the window and I saw these minarets sticking up. It's the weird, if you've never been in that kind of country, it was just so alien to me to see that.
Was it the famous, the Sophia, the blue one, or was it just...
No, they're everywhere. You know that.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going in and
they do look pretty cool. They look like something out of a fantasy film.
Yeah. And you're just coming in low over them. It's like, if you flew too low, you'd smack one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how low you come in over them eventually. But you just come in, you know, first you see, like... the Bosporus, and then you come in closer, and then you see, like, there's city everywhere, and then you get even closer, and it just looks like there's rockets everywhere, because
right,
the minarets, because they're very thin, and they have a point at the top.
They could almost be missile silos.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there phosphorus in the Bosphorus?
I hope so. Have to fly over at night. There was I posted years ago on radio, UFO Mystic. There was a sighting of one of those glowing wheels in the water, made up of. They're spokes. They look like spokes of a wheel that are miles and miles and miles long. But it's all phosphorescent
really?
Microscopic secret. Yeah, they've been going on since recorded history.
That's cool. I've never heard of that.
If you look in any of if you look up some of William Corliss's work, the Sourcebook Project, he was like Charles Ford on steroids. All he did was run around looking for anomalies, and then he compiled them in these books called the Sourcebook Project. I think you can get them all, sort of condensed down. I've got one of them just called, A Handbook of Anomalies. It's like, 400 pages long. Ball lightning, out-of-place objects like the COSO spark plug that they found. And what's that?
Sugar-free crystal light candy.
Oh, cool. God, what else is in there? Archaeological anomalies, all kinds, like I said, unexplained weather stuff, unexplained ocean stuff.
Could these wheels explain some of what are they called? The USOs in history?
Possibly, I guess. But these are just glowing phenomena. They move ever so slightly, or maybe it's just people are, drifting or going through them. And they said they go through them and if sometimes they're deep enough, they don't. Oh, no, I think they're on the surface. They're on the surface. But somehow they gather into these long, long, long spokes. And they said when they go through them, they can see them off on the horizon. They look like they could all be parallel, but when you see on the horizon, they all look like going to the vanishing point. So it may look
cool.
Like a wheel and a U.S. Navy like cruiser destroyer aircraft carrier or something about 2 years ago in the Persian Gulf saw one off the Strait of Hormuz and they reported it. So
what the hell
is my
that?
Phone?
Oh,
when I get a email, it does that noise. What else was I going to say
about the Navy cruiser going through the?
No, that was the end of that. But it was those are fascinating books if you can find them, the Sourcebook Project. I actually found, I think, in a bookstore, one of his early ones. It's in a three-ring binder. That's how he first published them. It's in this three-ring binder with an orange cover. And it's like handbook size. It's like,
cool.
4x6 or 6x8 or whatever it is.
Speaking of new books, I just I ordered Joseph Farrell's latest, with Scott DeHart, the Transhumanism book. Transhumanism and Alchemy. And
God, he's like Nick. It's just every time you turn
getting
around.
He's getting to be, I'll tell you. And I can't wait to start reading it.
Yeah, I did not read all of, I can't remember which book it was. I sent it off to Skylar out in Connecticut, where she is now. Paul's got a book out. Paul put out, which you should check out.
His new label, his first book under his new publishing label.
Yeah, Red Star Books, I guess, publishing. And the second one is Mac Tony's collected writings from his website. I guess there's some more coming. Did you hear my message earlier today?
I have to admit, I did not.
Oh, I sent you a message. I said, "Hey, Walter, I just hope you're still coming to the show. I'm jealous of Micah Hanks. He makes me feel like an old dinosaur who's not doing anything."
And why is that?
Because he's all the stuff we talk about here and I hear other people talking about and the exciting stuff. He's exploring it and taking it further, like trying to pull everything together, all the anomalous
a unified field theory.
Yeah, sort of a unified field theory. I can see Keel and Valet and a bunch of other people, Nick and Chris O'Brien, all these people that we know and love, they're all being concentrated in what he does and then brought forth anew. So if there's any, I was thinking there was an article that one of the listeners, Diana Manister, put up the other day, linked to some article in The Guardian that, wasn't The Guardian, but anyway, it was a British publication, which says, UFO researcher says, give up, say UFOs don't exist. which is sounds like a typical British thing to say, but they're just like, well, we haven't been able to prove anything, and it just keeps going on. And in fact, it's
I love those cups. I look at those. I want one of those.
Oh, this vacuum cup?
Yeah, that's just it's the right
of,
size.
Yeah, it's full of hot matcha, powdered green tea.
Oh, there you go.
Which is helping my... I mean, I drink it anyway, but it's helping my allergy, I think.
Well, stop being jealous of Micah and just get cracking. Several of us have been telling you that for a few years.
The second thought I have is I don't know if I care that much. I don't know if I care about that much, and I don't even know if I care to write about the UFO thing or... I don't know. It scares me, really, Walter. It actually frightens me a bit.
I think you care enough...
To be totally honest.
I think you care enough to look into it, but there's something about the writing that's not motivating you or appealing to you, so I would say do what I do. I haven't stopped my research. I'm just not inclined to write about it.
Yeah. Somebody just wrote me recently and said he wants to... And this might kick me a little bit, because the thing I was going to do with the New Mexico kind of weirdness, mm-hmm. My contact there just dropped off the map. When I went out there specifically to see him, he said, yeah, call me when you get here. We'll go see, you know, we'll hang out. I got there and didn't call me back. Finally called him. His wife said, oh, yeah, he'll call you later this afternoon. He never called me, didn't call me the next couple of days I was there. So
that's
I don't know what to say about that.
And his bona fides are good?
I don't know.
That
was the next step, you see. After he told me a little bit more, I was going to say, look, this sounds interesting. It's something I want to work on. And why don't you give me your DD-214?
Yep, DD-214.
Number, and I'll check it out. And if it's fine, then, you know, this is basically for when people ask me when I finish the book, you know, where the hell did you get this from? How do we know this guy? You know, that's probably the best way to tell. Whether everything that comes out of his mouth is either checkoutable or probably mostly not, or even true, I have no idea. But that's the point of doing some cross-checking. And then if he can't, just put it out there and say, look, this is what the claim was. I am not saying it is true or not. Oh, yeah. I keep getting letters from the ExoPolitics people. I want to get somebody to send me to this conference so I can report on it. I mean, because I would never in a million years pay for this. Here we go. Teleport Hawaii 2013 conference. Time travel, ETs, dolphins, and our positive timeline.
Oh, for God's
sake. You are invited to join us for 5 days and 4 nights on the Big Island of Hawaii to celebrate time travel experiences with chrononauts and clairvoyant telepaths. This is the first time three U.S. chrononauts and jump room experiencers appear together publicly in person at the same event. Guess who they are? Andrew Basiago, Bernard Mendez, who I've never heard of, Brett Stillings, who I've not heard of, Alfred Weber, of course, Laura Eisenhower, you know who she is?
Yes, I was on that conference with her last year, about a year ago this month, the alchemy thing. Yeah.
She's nuts. Benevolent extraterrestrials and scientists from our world with deep insights and advanced technology singled out these speakers due to their special innate and trained abilities. Mr. Weber was chosen as historian of the future.
Oh, for God's sake.
Ms. Eisenhower as a potential Mars colonist with pure bloodlines. Mr. Basiago as a supra-intelligent child prodigy. Mr. Stillings as a psychic savant, excelling in mathematics and chemistry, and Mr. Mendez, a federal investigator and contactee. They will share their courageous and mind-expanding development and training since childhood on diverse and fascinating life experiences such as jump rooms and vortal tunnels, the holographic interface that surrounds our Earth, artificial environments created by extraterrestrials that perfectly duplicate our natural environments. It goes on and on and on and on.
Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes. Well, a jump room is supposedly... there's that whole thing. Obama went to Mars in the jump room.
Yeah. Basiago claims that he was in the same training program as a child and saw Obama there.
A little more about it than I do.
Well, I... You know what? Sometimes it's just easier to leave it on KFI when... Coast to Coast is on than it is to...
Oh, so they've all been on that.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? That Coast to Coast audience loves that stuff.
Wow.
You know.
Well, I'm sure glad I'm not involved in that.
I guess that's the next the next generation of what the New Age conferences are going to be. Huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I was going to say, I thought you were going to say UFO studies. Like,
oh, God, no. No, 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 no. There's definitely... The good news is that as far as UFOs and other... we've talked about it before here ad nauseum with... you know, I think there's changes coming. You know, like our attitudes are different as researchers, and there's other researchers out there that are, you know, that kind of share the same attitude that, you know, let's just really dig into this and see what we actually find instead of, you know, rehashing other people's work or taking the words of people that, not that they're lying or something, but go out there yourself and experience yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that is the next thing.
Which I'm an advocate of.
Yeah. But not everybody can. Wow. I'll see if anybody's on Faceblock.
Well, no, everybody can. There's stuff all around you, no matter where you're at. If you seek, you shall find.
And the thing is that you have to find a thing and do it for a while. And if you expect something the first week... month, year, nope, ain't gonna happen.
Do it for knowledge, not to become the next paid speaker at a conference, not to become an author of a book.
Yeah,
really seriously, because I'm an advocate of. I have been convinced that these things will show themselves to you, but they're not so inclined to if you're doing it for commercial purposes.
Yeah, and I will ask Raiden about that when he is on in a few weeks here. I remember one thing he told me during that interview that changed my life, practically, or changed my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
That when people start, and strangely enough, Criswell, who was in the beginning of the show here every week, he said, I used to have a talent, but when I started accepting money for it, it went away.
That's right.
He actually said that, and this is something that Raiden said to me, you know, 40 years after Criswell said that, I guess in private to somebody. I think it's in that Nightmare of Ecstasy book by Rudolph Gray. It basically is just interviews with everybody that knew Ed Wood and his group. But the it seems like it's corrupted if there's a greed factor going
on. Let's not call it greed. That word gets misused. And
if you try to make a living off it rather than
it becomes
use
less
it
sincere.
For its own ends. Right. If it's not used for its own ends, it's not like punishment. It's just like your brain doesn't receive the way it's going to receive. It's basically analytical overlay.
Exactly.
You know,
you're diluting the stream. But greed. You know, because somebody that wants to make a buck isn't necessarily greedy.
No, I didn't. Yeah. Okay, semantics. Sorry.
But that's important semantics because I think there are some people out there that are in the psychic trade and stuff like that that aren't bad people that think it's okay to make money because they think, well, I'm providing a service to help people, you know? And what they don't realize, Criswell was honest about it, and I think most of them would be more honest with themselves than they would to us.
Yeah.
That. You know, the power is diluted. It does become weaker because there's just something about the nature of it and the source of it that says, hey, wait a minute. This is a gift with side effects for better or worse that has a purpose, but there's plenty of other ways to make your living. Don't use this to make your living.
I guess, but I think it's a very basic thing where you screw up your receiver if you're thinking,
oh, yeah, I agree
if
you.
I get what I want to get or I get what the person wants to get or whatever,
that's the technical
I will have
aspects
a,
of what we're talking
yeah,
about.
I yeah, will have, I will it, I will be rewarded somehow, and you want that reward. Who doesn't?
You're talking about, yeah, I agree with you, but that's the technical. I was talking about the policy. We agree. I think the policy is this is
whose
not
policy?
The source of this.
Okay, I don't associate it as having a policy.
Oh, it has a policy.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's shown me.
See, I don't have that, you know. I just hear from people.
They're real. I'm telling you, the disembodied entities are real. the things we've come to call gods, they're real. They have personalities. They're not.
That's what your government people told you to tell all these people.
Right. I wish I was getting the paycheck.
You go right ahead and think that.
I wish I was getting the paycheck for that then.
Yeah, that's what Bill said. I haven't talked to him since right before the online conference. Now, and I'm going to be on it. Nancy Wallace, who does those Wake Up Now conferences, is doing an online conference.
Really? How is she? Think she's going to have a good turnout? Or
I don't know yet. I sent her all my information. I said I'd do it, and GoRightly's doing it. Couple other people, I think Nick, and I don't know her business. I don't know how well it's doing or how many people she's had sign up already. She's trying to do it to raise money to do the actual conference, so it's
kind of like our original idea.
Yeah, exactly. So I hope she does better at it than we did.
Well, I think we did okay. I just think what happened was there wasn't. The commitment level ran out, I think.
Yeah.
Is what happened.
Yeah. Oh, good. The listeners went up. People have started tuning in. Hello, more listeners. I said when I posted on Facebook about this, I said it'd be a call-in show, and you may call in if you like. Is that all right, Ralph Walter?
It's your show, Mr. Bishop. Of course.
All right with you. 213-252-0998. Did you hear the song I played during Paul's show, during Paul's interview a couple weeks ago? Mm-hmm. It's The Thing by Phil Harris. It's a perfect Anomalies song, and it's just it's basically like something you'd hear on Dr. Demento.
Did he do it for Disney?
Oh, well, now I can't play because somebody's calling in. No, he did it for himself.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. And of course, while he's answering the phone, speaking of Disney, I guess everybody's heard of Disney buying Lucasfilm. And they announced that there will be a Star Wars Episode 7, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
And
can I play this Phil Harris song, or do you want me to
looks like Greg is going to play the song
while
he's answering the phone, and we'll have... I want to take this opportunity to remind everybody that 2 weeks from tonight is the premiere event of my silent movie, Hell's Bells, which will be at the Redlands Fox Theater. We're going to show trailers. We're going to have a red carpet arrival. We're going to premiere it's about 45-minute short feature, black and white, set in the 1920s, but it's at the classic Fox Theater in Redlands. Tickets online are $7. Yes, if you buy tickets ahead of time online, they're $7. They're $10 at the door. But the theater also has this amazing chef, and you can get dinner and the show for $17. We've already got a fair size attending, but we got plenty more seats. So if you go to, I'll do the website later, but you know, if you type in Hell's Bells Premiere Event, Fox Theater, Redlands, you should come to one of the various links and things out there that will take you to it. So back to the show. that was my FM.
Ward's on the line here, but I want to play the song The Thing by Phil Harris, which I like a lot. And then later in the show, I'll play another song that I liked.
Is it
that
about
I found
The Thing in Arizona?
No, it's not about that. Oh, you'll see. It's a perfect song about anomalies and cryptozoology or even UFOs.
While I was walking down the beach one bright and sunny day, I saw a great big wooden box a-floating in the bay. I pulled it in and opened it up, and much to my surprise, ooh, I discovered a... Right before my eyes, ooh, I discovered a... Right before my eyes, I picked it up and ran to town as happy as a king. I took it to a guy I knew who'd buy most anything. But this is what he hollered at me as I walked in his shop. Ooh, get out of here with that. Before I call a cop. Ooh, get out of here with that.
before I call a cop. I turned around and got right out of running for my life. And then I took it home with me to give it to my wife. But this is what she hollered at me as I walked in the door. Oh, get out of here with that. And don't come back no more. Oh, get out of here with that. And don't come back no more. I wandered all around the town until I chanced to meet a hobo who was looking for a handout on the street. He said he'd take most any old thing, he was a desperate man. But when I showed him the, he turned around and ran. Oh, when I showed him the, he turned around and ran. I wandered on for many years, a victim of my fate, until one day I came upon St. Peter at the gate. And when I tried to take it inside, he told me where to go. Get out of here with that, and take it down below. Oh, get out of here with that, and take it down below. The moral of the story is, if you're out on the beach, and you should see a great big box and it's within your reach, don't ever stop and open it up. That's my advice to you. 'Cause you'll never get rid of them, no matter what you do. Oh, you'll never get rid of them, no matter what you do.
That is a kick-ass song.
It's totally cool. You gotta love Phil Harris.
Yeah. I can't remember this. He did a bunch of other songs. I've seen on YouTube, you can see him on the Johnny Cash show singing with Johnny.
Oh.
From the 60s when Johnny Cash had a
show. You know, I mentioned Disney buying Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
It finally justifies the presence of Star Tours and Indiana Jones in the park.
Yeah.
They kind of did it ass backwards.
Yeah.
But now it justifies it. So now I approve.
Oh, okay. Before you didn't?
Before, I as much as I enjoy the Indy ride and it's cool and everything, I really didn't approve. Because, you know. But now, they own it.
Why not? Ward, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can. I just don't know what was in the box.
No, well, that's the point.
I think maybe it was a wife or something.
A what?
A wife.
No, well, he took the thing to his wife.
Oh, okay.
And the bum didn't want it. Well, I guess a bum might want it, but St. Peter didn't want it. He said, take it down below.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. God bless you.
Thank you.
No, and it's weird. Walter brought this up, and I was wondering, you know, I paid for every single one of those, Walter. I watched and enjoyed all four conferences, and I would have bought more if there were more. So,
there we go.
We're waiting for the Cybern to pass, Ward. Sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead. You would have bought more.
I would have bought more if you guys had done more. You know, anybody gonna? I mean, that was a really fun thing to do on a Saturday, and just sit back and have like four or five lectures. I remember watching Greg do his. Actually, I think Greg did two.
Yeah, and, I did one at the first one, and then the last. Actually, I did. I parentheses. I did the first one and the last one.
Yeah, and Walter did too. And you know, I liked a lot of the. I mean, you know, there were a couple of wackadoos.
yes, there were. We did not pick them.
But well, for the most part, I enjoyed most of the stuff, and I actually heard stuff in there. Like I think Walter, you originally had. Start off making sure that people had brought up stuff that they had never brought up in any other venue.
That's what we tried to do. Yeah, I mean that was the original vision, and that was the idea was to because we were having people pay for it. You know,
right?
It couldn't be stuff that you could just hear on any free podcast. And I think it, you know, in all reality though, these things take a lot of work, especially for the guy broadcasting it. And it's a lot of time, it's a lot of effort, it's a lot of work, a lot of preparation. And unfortunately, you kind of have to have a threshold of participants to make enough to, you know, make that worth your while.
Yeah.
With those things, that's just, you know, the nature of it. But I'm glad you enjoyed it because it's a hell of an idea, and other people are going to be doing it just as we predicted. And,
yeah, there, one of the listeners, he's always listening to Don's show too, and he's a nice guy. Well, I don't know him personally, but a guy named Ryan up in Washington, and
yeah.
He said that you you had DVDs of the DVDs available, and I always wondered where we could buy those or how that worked.
Kevin was going to do that, and you'd have to ask Kevin Smith about that because he actually owns the
rights.
Well,
Walter and I'll tag team it and ask him too. I'd like to see. I don't even know what happened. I mean, I did the thing, and the first one was okay, but the second one was something I really wanted to do, and mm-hmm. it had reverberations, and I enjoyed it. So
yeah,
I would like to see what I actually said. I didn't write the speech. I mean, I just...
I wrote mine down. I was just looking at it the other day. But, no, that's a good question, Ward.
So, yeah, we should all tag team him.
Yeah, no, there was... and especially, like, Walter's final... it was weird. It was almost like Walter gave a huge amount of information, especially in that second lecture.
Yeah.
And actually, it's one of the slideshows, it hung up on the presentation. And we didn't get to see the whole thing. Some of the pictures he had taken on his walk down there at the...
You didn't see them all on your end?
What's that?
You didn't see them all on your end?
Yeah, I didn't see them all on my end.
That's interesting.
It's weird. I think, the funny thing is, it stopped where the where you saw that octagonal shape.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what. If you email me, anybody that wants to see the images... can email me, and I'll just email the images. I'll do kind of a group email, and I'll send them, for those who didn't get to see them all, because it's there. What I talked about is there, and I have had some interesting experiences, phenomenal experiences related to it. And, by all means, that was why I made that presentation. I wanted you guys to see that. So if you missed it, absolutely, I'll email those out. Or maybe I'll post them somewhere, but let me know. I don't mind emailing them.
Cool. Yeah. I just thought that was real interesting. And for me, I don't know, the buffering or whatever, but the thing stopped when you got to that stop spot, that symbol for the stop.
That's synchronicity. Now you're saying just the visual stop, but you could hear me go on, right?
But I could hear the whole thing. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good. Well, that is interesting that the visual stopped there. That's a synchronicity. That is not a coincidence. That is a synchronicity.
Well, it stuck in my mind because I remember thinking, geez, what else is there?
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing?
Well, you might still feel that way when you see them.
Hey, listen, you guys remember a couple years ago there was somebody came down to do a documentary with all you guys?
Yeah, Sam Fielder did that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Is that film ever going to be out?
God, I hope so. I wrote to him a little while ago. I said, "What's up with the film, Sam?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm still editing it. I might want to come back and shoot some more." I was like, "Oh, come on, Sam, just get the thing out there." There were some good pieces he got in there because every once in a while, somebody would just go off or they would get on a roll. Nick did it. Our friend Jane that was on there, Walter did. My friend Robert and I, they started asking us about the start of The Excluded Middle. And we went on for like 45 minutes of all the weird stuff that went on and how we met and all the stuff that happened. And we really had fun doing the talking to each other about it. All of us did about whatever we were talking about. And it still hasn't come out. There's a great footage in there. I got to go. Wrightley's producing the thing. You ought to... send him some daggers, by email. It's like, what the hell, light a fire under Sam here and I'll do it.
Yeah, it's funny you mention him too, because I think you should have him on again.
I always think I should have him on again. He's probably on Facebook going, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that lecture he gave that one, on the conference, was like, essentially like, sex and paranormal and UFOs and the whole thing. I really found all that stuff fascinating.
He's a fascinating guy. He's on our trip with us out to the petroglyphs here in a couple of months. Or next month. Less than a month now.
Yeah. So December?
Yeah, Walter couldn't go.
Yeah.
Well, I think you all bring like a lot of interesting pieces of the puzzle together, and like Walter being an OSI for so long and then FBI, right? Walter?
I was not for so long, but I was FBI for 6 years, and then I was OSI for about 6 years, and 5 years and change.
That's pretty long.
And there's some guys that did 20, and then after that,
make it
some
sound like
guys,
a sentence.
So
I did 20.
but it's extremely rare. I remember talking to some people in the Air Force, and to get a posting at OSI was like oh God, it was like 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 10,000.
Oh yeah, I was a direct acquisition, I guess they call it.
Stay on top of the microphone.
I was a direct acquisition because when I went to talk to the recruiter, I was employed by the FBI in, you know, counterintelligence on the operational level. And they liked that. Of course, I already had a degree, so I went into OTS and went right in. And I already knew. It's interesting you mention that, because when you go into officer school, you usually don't find out what you're going to be doing until about a week or two before you graduate. And that's when everybody finds out their assignments. But there were a few of us. I was OSI. I think three other guys were going into Intel. And we knew exactly what command and what job we were going to be going into. I already knew my base assignment, actually. I already knew that I was going to L.A. Air Force Base here in El Segundo. But
which is condos now.
Really? Wow. And, well, that area, I think. Yeah. And so my officer, my training officer, I'm doing a brain dump. The guy who was in charge of our group, flight training officer, FTO, I'm sorry. He hated me because I guess his whole career he tried to get into OSI and never could do it. And here he had, you know, a 120-day wonder who was turning 30 halfway through, going right into it. So he hated me, but he didn't get me. I got my commission. I made it through his bullshit. Anyway, long story, sorry.
Well, Walt, Ward's a special case here because he's on the same wavelength, and that's why he liked the conferences, I think. It's a lot harder to get more people interested in something like that, especially if we can't get the publicity out, which was part of it, too.
Well, I mean, Greg, you had some – I mean, like, I don't know if anybody else has had, as an example, like Bob Emenegger on. I mean, you did now, what, 3 interviews with him, and they were all fantastic, and – you know, there was stuff coming out of Emenegger that is just, like, pivotal to a lot of this.
Yeah.
To a lot of the understanding of the government's position on this, and which brings me to that whole, the thing in that, it's almost like that window of 76 to 80, actually 70s, maybe even longer than that, there was a window of opportunity in there where science took it seriously. Universities took it seriously. The government took it seriously. Everybody was kind of on the same wavelength, and then it just all shut down.
Yeah, I don't know what the reason for that is, except for maybe it wasn't all taken seriously, one, at the same time, and two, by people who mattered in the right way, you know, meaning people who had the power to push that kind of stuff through instead of people that just wanted it pushed through.
Well, I don't see that right now. I don't see in the foreseeable future these kind of people being interested, because look at the NASA's at a nadir right now. Yeah. I mean, the shuttle program's shut down. We don't have a manned program. You know, we're doing the Mars rover thing, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And so when you have that lack of interest...
And then in like a month and a day, the world ends anyway.
That's so. Right. It all ends. about a month or so.
Yeah, a month, December 12th, right?
Yeah.
Or is that what it is, Ward? December 12th?
December 21st. It's supposed to be.
Yeah, oh, okay. 21st. Oh, we have over a month then. Okay, well, then I can keep charging up my credit card more.
You know, what I'm hoping, Ward, is that, and I'm not going to go political here. I'm just using this as a point of current event reference. Now that the election is over, I'm hoping that for the next couple of years, people, their interest will be in other things instead of the obsessing on the politics.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, but didn't fun Emenegger, things. Didn't Emenegger say that, that I think this might have been one of the first interview that you did, Greg, not the most two recent ones, but
yeah,
the one before.
He said so much.
I think he said something along the lines of when the they asked him, why are you giving us this information, or why are you releasing it? And the guy said something along the lines of, when the Secretary of Defense gives you an order, you follow it. Do you remember him saying that?
Yeah, I do vaguely remember him saying that.
So that's incredibly high up in the chain of command, right, Walter?
Well, Secretary of Defense is the civilian guy on top of all the U.S. military.
Yeah, well, it's incredibly important for a number of reasons, not the least of which is
other than the president, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is that is that because the Secretary of Defense actually said that? Or if he did actually say that, was he doing it because he wanted people to know about UFOs? Or was there some other reason?
I never think
that these people have a direct... There's never a direct reason why any of this stuff is done or pushed around.
Especially,
particularly if it's done kind of sub rosa like that. I think it's a little bit easier to see people's motivations as things play out when something is publicly announced and is, you know, done overtly in the media. When it's done like through back channels like this, you never know what's going on.
Craig, I've been listening to you for years, and that's the first thing I thought. And Walter, too, perception management, you know? Absolutely, that's the first thing I thought. But just that they were interested in doing this and they had stringed him on for so long and they were going to get that footage and, you know, I don't think the radar operators at, was it Holloman?
I think it was Holloman where he said Holloman, he was walking into that, he just walked in that room and the guy said, oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, the flying bathtub.
Yeah.
And now, not unless that was a really well, you know, planned execution of something, but it sounds to me like, he really stumbled onto somebody who had seen something there.
What was the year of the flying bathtub sighting?
The Holloman landing was, what was it, Ward, 67 or
gosh,
something?
Gosh, if I gave you an
late
60s, I'd be wrong.
And what was the years that the Have Blue program was...
Mid to late 80s.
Yeah, because the Have Blue physically looks like an upside down bathtub when you think about it.
It does kind of. Have Blue was an early version of Stealth Fighter.
Stealth, yeah. Hey, can you move Walter closer to the? I can barely hear him.
Oh, okay. I'm here. Is that better? Maybe I should hold it in my hand.
Yeah, well, Walter. Yeah, this is radio. You have to stay right on top of the microphone here, practically kissing it and smelling everybody else's bad breath. It's used the microphone before you.
That's why I'm glad this is what gets nasty.
Yeah. I don't even remember everything Bob said, and also we did not follow up on a lot of the stuff that he said because, one, Bob is not stupid. I think once in a while he will mention something, and he doesn't follow it up for a reason. I think there's a reason sometimes he doesn't follow stuff up because he just wants somebody to get back to him, or maybe it'll jog somebody's memory in a certain way.
Or maybe he feels like he's gone to a point where he really doesn't want to go beyond, so he stops himself.
Or that, too. And he went into a lot of things very lightly that seemed very important in a lot of ways.
Greg, that's why you have listeners like Carlos and, you know, all the other listeners, too, that listen to your shows again and again and again and again and again, and will hear these things. You know,
yeah, like, you hear more than I do. I went out to lunch with this guy. I can't remember his name. Was it Brian? Anyway, he took me to lunch, and he started talking to me about stuff that I couldn't even remember saying or doing. And I had to, like, rack my brain and try and explain to him try to answer his questions, because I couldn't remember what he said. Because I listen to these shows at the most, I'll listen to them once more after I do them, because I have to edit them and, you know, take out the ums and uhs and the breathing and the sneezing or whatever the hell. Or
right,
something inadvertent,
yeah.
I said that I didn't particularly want to say.
Well, you know,
which is why you should listen to the live show
of Whitley Strieber, and it's funny, his observation was a direct confirmation to Whitley's second book, Transformation.
And really? What did he say about Strieber? I can't remember.
He said that he had had dinner with Strieber and his wife.
Yeah.
At his house, I believe it was at his house.
Yeah,
and he had offered Strieber.
The chocolate.
A piece of chocolate cake. Yeah, and Strieber said, "No, I can't have it. They told me I can't."
Yeah,
and he thought that's odd. What do they mean by they? Well, there is a story in Transformation about essentially Whitley having to give up his addiction to chocolate.
Yeah. Well, there may be many reasons for that, not the least of which is aliens telling him.
I mean, that's an interesting, confirmation that it was in one of Whitley's books.
Well, it'd
know,
be,
it's funny.
It means either they told him or he has a really good memory and he can remember the stuff that he does. I don't think he thinks he made up a lot of the stuff. I think a lot of it is confabulated, but I think a core of it isn't.
You know, that's strange. With Whitley, I keep going back and forth. I do think it's almost like an Adansky thing. It might even be a creation from him.
Yeah. No, I think it is, but I think there's a core experience of some other that is not him, because there have been plenty of people around, unless he's psychokinetic, that have seen weird things too. And it's not just in his books. People have talked about it. I've talked to people that have stayed at his house and never said anything public about things and what happened to them.
Yeah, you know, I needed to phrase that. When I said a creation of his, what I mean is it's
a manifestation,
maybe like a Tulpa-esque thing, you know, it's either a formation of his mind or maybe it's an interaction between him and the environment, because it almost ceased. Almost all of his activity, well, essentially all of his activity ceased once he left the cabin.
Yeah. And then the next people that got it, I don't think anything happened. At least I that's what I think I heard.
But people were seeing lights above his cabin and stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's pretty interesting stuff.
I remember when it was for sale. I was like, oh, man, I wish I was, like, you know, a zillionaire. What would have been interesting is to, and I asked him about this, Strieber, when the one time I had dinner with him, and I think I mentioned this, I asked him about when William Burroughs came to stay at his cabin. Twice he did it. Because he wanted to have an experience of whatever this was. And he said he didn't necessarily think it was going to be benevolent or nice either. But he still wanted the experience. He wanted to see what it was. And Strieber said, you know, he was the nicest person, really smart, really sharp, really polite, willing to talk about anything. And he was kind of pissed that nothing happened when he was there.
Well, you know, this is really strange. I don't know why this is coming right now, but it's what Walter said at the beginning. Maybe you too as well, Greg. Do you think maybe this stuff got diminished in his life because Whitley is, you know, so dependent now on unknown country and dreamland? And you know,
I would say yes. I would say it's diluted it, but I couldn't. I've never met Whitley, and only he can say if it's backed off or diluted. But just to guess, I would guess that. Let me say it wouldn't surprise me, Ward, if Whitley said, "Yeah, it has kind of waned off."
Yeah, I seem to remember him saying something about that, maybe even in reference to what you said about moving away from the cabin.
Well,
so I don't know. The funny thing is, I used to Mac Tony's of all people had the exact same feeling I did about Strieber, that there was something going on there, but it was so diluted with everything that he expected and what other people expected afterwards and all that, that
it's like the Bell Witch.
Yeah, we'd never get the real, you know, whatever, a true story, and Strieber probably wouldn't either. Have you ever read that Bell Witch book, you, Ward, or you, Walter?
Mm-hmm.
I heard the interview. I heard an interview on Art Bell, as a matter of fact, about the Bell Witch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there was an interview about the Bell Witch.
You mean the original material, or
yeah,
the
Bell Witch,
recently?
A Mysterious Spirit of Tennessee, that book.
Yeah, that, and also I read a recent book that talks about the Bell Witch. I was in Israel when I read it, actually, and had it on one of my trips. And I'm trying to remember it. When I think of the title, I'll tell you sometime.
Yeah, very early. Poltergeist thing. It sounds like Jeff the Talking Mongoose, if you know anything about that one, from Britain in the 50s. Sorry.
Gesundheit.
Wow.
It's I think it's a season change, and whenever the weather gets cold or warm, suddenly I, you know, at the change of the season, I get these horrible allergy attacks.
Huh. Yeah, no, a couple weeks ago, it was cool that Carlos called in. I just wanted to give him a shout-out, too.
Okay, yeah, he says hi on Facebook. I was saying he could call in if he wanted in a bit, but that was before you called.
Oh, you know, no sweat, man. I can go I can split right now.
Hey, Walter, Carlos, if you want to chime in and call in, tell me here on the Facebook message, and Ward will back out a little bit.
Yeah, maybe Gorightly could call in. It'd be cool to hear from him.
Yeah, if I stop sneezing.
Bless you.
I don't see him on Flatebook, so he may be out. I'm out next week, and then after that, I don't know who's going to be on. Nobody ever reacted that I got Dean Radin here to be on December 9th.
Was that the Halloween guest?
No, he's going to be on December 9th.
No, I know, but on your website, you kept saying special Halloween show.
Yeah, and then, you know,
that's
surprise
music,
guest,
right?
To be announced, yes.
Right, okay, so that's still coming up.
Who was it?
Who what?
Who was the Halloween show surprise guest?
No, there wasn't a guest. I said Halloween show. upcoming surprise guest to be announced soon.
Okay. Sorry,
okay.
And it was Dean Radin.
Nobody did anything for Halloween this year.
Nobody
did anything interesting for Halloween anymore.
You know what, Ward? Thank you for mentioning that. Halloween is the second best holiday of the year. For me, it's not just a day. It's
the
a
best.
Season.
What's the first best? Your birthday?
I love Christmas. I'm cheesy. Okay. But
not your birthday.
But I love a Halloween-tinged Christmas, kind of. If Poe and Dickens wrote about Christmas together, that would be my perfect Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right. Nobody seems to get into the cooler, spookier aspects of Halloween anymore.
You know what I ended up doing? Editing a bunch of old Art Bell Ghost to Ghost.
There you go.
And open line entity attack entity attack stories that people called in.
There you go.
That was really cool.
You know what? Again, I think, honestly, this year people were just too preoccupied with the election coming up a week later, you know.
Well, if you have a file of that, Ward, if you can email it to me or something, I'd love to hear all that.
Oh, Greg, I've got him going back to 93.
Wow. The first Art Bell I heard, I think, was in 92 or 3.
Really? We were actually on. You were actually on Art Bell, so not many people can say that.
Yeah, sure. I don't know. About half the population of the country can say it now. I think by now.
Oh, that's terrible. That's true, though.
Well, remember that thing that Fate magazine did? 100 top people in ufology. It's like, Greg, you made the 100 top people in ufology. It's like, can you even think of 100 100 people in ufology? It's not too tough. But the cool thing was, it was alphabetical, so I came right after Art Bell.
There you go.
And Walter, I'm really glad that you can spend money on gas now.
And come in
when Greg's on the air, because it's just not the same.
Seriously, Ward, when the gas prices spike, that's what keeps me, because I got to put every dime into my movies now.
Yeah.
And with the gas prices taking a dive, one of the first thing I thought of was, I can go into Greg's show again. Because otherwise, it's prohibitive.
Yeah, and my interest kind of waxes and wanes. Like for weeks or months, I'll be really interested in doing stuff, and then for weeks or months, I'll be kind of half interested, and other stuff will be going on. I got my flying thing going on now, and when I get my license, I think I'll be able to concentrate more on some of these other projects again. Because I go there 2 times a week, and then in between, I'm studying. So.
Yeah, well, I'm going to free up the line here because I don't want to stay the whole show because I really want some other people calling. But let me ask you guys this, this last thing, and this is just like totally way out of left field, okay? But do you know of any like reliable, solid sources? Okay, this may sound completely ridiculous, but do you know of like any reliable, non-deceptive sources for knowledge and information that's not human-based?
Start with yourself and be open to, a little more open to what's around you, and it will present itself.
And that'll
like
only...
Everything we learn from each other or from reading from books or from experiences by other people. I'll just listen offline, but how can you get information to yourself that doesn't have to come from somebody else? And anyway, I'll say goodnight, guys.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ward. We'll hash this out a bit, and then I guess Carlos will come in. But yeah, this is an interesting question.
I recommend remote viewing. It worked for me tremendously. Explore the ley lines, seriously. Explore the telluric currents and the ley lines. Look, especially at the intersections of them. But topography. But start with yourself. That's what I'd recommend to anybody. Don't go to anyone else.
Yeah. Whatever you're interested in, do that thing.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter what it is.
Yeah. Pull that thread. Follow that trail, and be open, and it will lead you.
Because I've really never had any paranormal. Well, I had a few. But I didn't go looking for them. I was just off doing other stuff, and they happened. And I don't
know.
I know
that's when they're more inclined to happen.
Yeah. You can't be in there trying to do anything really, except doing the thing that you do. Because when you do the thing that you do, the thing that makes you go, mm-hmm. the thing that keeps you inspired.
Yeah.
that knowledge will come with it, and whatever
yes.
knowledge you get from that, be it if you think it's coming from some other intelligence or an elder god or whatever the hell, mm-hmm. disembodied spirit or aliens or whatever, if you think that's where it's coming from, fine, that's where it's coming from. But you have to remember that other people don't have that experience, and if you start saying this is the revelation, a lot of people are going to look at you funny.
Once it introduces itself...
And then you ride that
yeah.
you ride that thing.
But once it introduces itself, once the veil is lifted, it will choose, often it will choose when it has something to communicate to you.
Yeah.
You won't necessarily have to do something every time. It'll when it wants to communicate with you.
Oh, it was my foot doing that.
It
when the phone rang, it started shaking. I was like,
it makes itself known, and it comes to you and says, "Hey, a transmission's coming through here, my friend," and it sends its own signals, and sometimes that's for better or worse. I know sometimes what I get is not a pleasant, you know, it's not like a horror film, but what I'm saying is it's not always a Richard Dreyfuss Close Encounters kind of experience. But you just have to, another thing that's important, Ward, if you're listening, anyone who's listening, is ignore the critics. And what I mean by critics are the skeptic camp people. You know, ignore them. Ignore the other extremists that will tell you what your experience is. You know, you have an experience, and they'll tell you, "Oh, well, that's the Space Brotherhood," or you know, "Oh, those are demons." You know, you have to be your own source because it's out there. All these things are out there, and they want to communicate and reveal themselves. They want you to see them, but you have to be open and strong enough to see them. You have to be willing to see them. I would be careful with any... I would not advise you to try and directly communicate with any of these entities or anything like that, but the signs and the things are there. But just, you know, ignore your critics. And be careful.
Vicky's called in, and I said, I know who this is. Who is it? This is. And I heard the frogs in the background. Remember, she's the one in Hawaii, and when she calls in, we can hear the frogs.
Oh, when you said Vicky, I thought you meant Ecker.
No. This is Vicky from Hawaii, I think.
Okay. Well, there you go.
She wanted to know about your remote viewing experiences, how that informed. I think what she's asking is how that informs your viewpoint on things, and... Like I said, what specifically happened, maybe in a nutshell? And how did it affect you?
Well, what it as...
Why do you keep cutting out? You have to hold them in front.
As you know, as I was... Because I shared this with you, I experienced extraordinary positive accuracy.
Yeah.
It was amazing, almost scary. And after I started doing that, a whole window of synchronicity and revelation opened up to me that led to the Cora Stanton mystery, which I and Rick Spence wrote about in Empire of the Wheel. I was not consciously aware of Cora Stanton and any of that at the time I started remote viewing in late summer of 2007. And then by early 2008 is when I first learned of the Cora Stanton mystery. Now, it would take two other shows or another show entirely to explain all the evidence that was there and all the communication coming from the elements of the mystery throughout many years of my life that were present. In other words, subconsciously, I was totally aware of it. But it was the remote viewing that opened the window of it coming through consciously. And then leading me on that path and that trail. More directly, what I experienced was, it works. And I learned, it's interesting. I had an experience where after about the fourth, there's like 11 or 12 steps in the protocol that I was trained in. And I quickly came to realize that I only needed to do the first four. That the remaining eight were just extraneous. They weren't necessary. And my trainer got a little aggravated with me. And then later, when he was talking with the designer of the protocol, that designer told him, "Oh yeah, you really only need the first three or four, and the rest are not necessary." And so I realized, wow, okay, that was an insight there. But I had, and continue. I mean, it hasn't stopped, you see the synchronicities with things, or you see the topological metaphors. You just see what's there that you weren't noticing before, and it comes to you. It makes itself known, and that's what I was saying to Ward: is you have to be prepared for that, and not everybody can handle it because it's freaky. I'm going to tell you, it's freaky.
Yeah. Okay. The other question she had is, what do you guys think of the video of the Denver UFOs that came out recently? And I said I'd heard of them.
Yeah, I haven't seen them.
Yeah. Somebody in Denver, apparently, a couple weeks ago, or how long ago was this? Everybody listening probably already knows about this. Oh, no, this was posted today. But these, this has been in the news for a little while. What it is videos of objects floating around between noon and 1 p.m., this guy says, and over a populated area of Denver. And some people say it's bugs. It kind of looks like it might be bugs to me. But an aviation expert says bugs. He doesn't know what they are.
Well, that's interesting. It's always interesting when something happens in Denver because, as we know, the strangeness surrounding the airport to begin with, and the history with Tesla and what he, you know, was doing there. You know, Denver, of course, is a very curious area. So we have our caller.
Yeah, it's our friend Carlos.
Hey, Carlos.
Hey, Walter.
So you must have seen the post. It's a call-in show. So Ward called in, Vicky called in, and now, hi, Carlos.
Ward was asking about sources for how to learn from or other sources.
I think his question was how do you know when information is coming from something that claims to be non-human, if it's accurate or not, and you don't really. That's at least what Walter and I took him to be asking.
Well, as far as non-human sources, we seem to, because we've become hardwired materialistic technologists here in the West, we seem to forget that we've always been surrounded by animals, and animals seem to sense, not so much insects, but especially with dogs, cats, other animals like that, they seem to have a sense of, they seem to see or hear things that we can't, not just, and especially in terms of like, we always, the scientists are always saying, well, you know, what's up with Bigfoot? And let me tell you something, that I figured out a long time ago, if Bigfoot wasn't real, dogs would not act the way they behave. They, it's, I don't know if it's paranormal or actual flesh and blood creature, but all I know is that from all the accounts that I've read about, Bigfoot and dogs, dogs refuse to track it. Dogs are very reluctant to track it. Dogs behave like it's a super predator, like a bear or a tiger or something like that. They just go nuts whenever Bigfoot's around.
That's cool. I've never heard that.
Cats. There's something very weird with cats. I've had known people who had several cats, and cats will sit and stare into space for hours on end, like they're watching something. But there's nothing there. Now,
our cat does that all the time. And plus, she'll do something like her eyes will follow something around the room and there's no bugs or anything. And my wife and I make a joke about it. We're like, the cat's looking and going, whoa, and it looks like it almost hit, it like ducks, like something almost hit it on the head, and we're like, didn't you see that? It just, it almost hit me.
Maybe they're just vapid or crazy.
or they have, we don't know, we can't see through cat's eyes.
Right.
Cats have some like some other mammals, they have beyond visual, what normal, they can see beyond visual range what humans can see in terms of heat and light.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of
that sounds perception. Like a John Keel kind
so
of idea.
What they are seeing, we may not be able to see.
Yeah. That sounds like a John Keel idea, that the super spectrum thing.
Right, exactly. That yeah, that's very good. Yeah. I'm going to change the routing a little bit. It's towards Walter, and he,
yep.
Just to throw something at Walter, since he brought it up, to Disney buying Lucas, and it's something that I thought of a while back.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did, well, it's not so much Disney bought Lucasfilms as much as merged with Lucasfilms, because old George got $2 billion in common stock of Disney.
Oh, that's interesting, because I read that the purchase price was $4 billion of Lucasfilm, for Lucasfilm.
Right.
And so, but George gets $2 billion in Disney, huh?
Yeah, he gets $2 billion, and I'm thinking George is planning a galactic rebellion here. He might be trying to take over Disney.
It could be reverse of what we think.
Exactly.
Oh.
You know, it's just one of those things. That's like you got two plus billion up front. I think 2.1 billion, and 2+ billion in stock, in common Disney stock. And
right.
Hey, that's a lot of stock.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I wonder what the percentage is, though. And he could have partners, too. You know, all they got to do is get up to 50, that magic 51, and
he takes over Disney, and Disney controls a lot.
Oh God, yeah.
Various studios, including Marvel.
Yes.
So what are we seeing here? You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you see something up front, you know, and it's you see something happening up front, but the appearance can be quite deceiving, and the public appearance can be quite deceiving.
Right, right. It's prestidigitation. They're pulling on
exactly.
us. Little sleight of hand exactly. there, and that could be interesting. Oh. Imagine Lucas in charge of Disney.
The Have Blue.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were talking about Have Blue.
Right.
Blue, all that. The first experimental stealth planes took off in the late 70s, right? 77, 78.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're called Have Blue at that, but were they? Was that the first iteration of them?
Yes, the little airplane, the little like the first experimental prototype was about a third of the size of the original stealth fighter, and it was called Have Blue.
Yeah,
and it was it flew in the late 70s, early 80s, and before the developmental program even finished, they were starting on the first. Stealth attack aircraft. They weren't really fighters.
Yeah, that
they
was
called
that,
it an F, but it was really just a.
Yeah,
a
I think those
bomber.
Were that senior series, senior yes. citizen and senior whatever. There was like three or four different.
I'd have to look it up. I've got the original Lockheed. I've got the public Skunk Works book, and it's Lockheed Skunk Works had their pies in a lot of things, you know, in terms of experimental aircraft and stuff like that. And I'm sure they're still producing stuff that we won't see until, you know, 2030 or 2040.
Yeah, if ever.
I was going up there in 2007, 2008 when I was doing background investigations.
To Edwards or?
Edwards and the Skunk Works.
Oh, okay.
And
but it was in Burbank still.
Well, where I was going was up in Lancaster, Palmdale.
Oh, okay, okay. Because they had a facility in Burbank up to the late 80s, I think, or early 90s. I worked next to that building. Right near
the Burbank one?
Near the Burbank airport, we worked near the Skunk Works building. It is now owned, the building is now occupied by Kaiser. And they had to go into that building and dismantle part of it because it had a double metal shell around it so people couldn't listen in on what was going on inside the building.
Yeah, they didn't want Tempest to be able to be applied there.
Who?
Tempest is anti-electronic data gathering.
Okay.
It reads vibrations off windows. Remember in
they do that with lasers and I can't remember. There's other versions of it too, but yeah, mm-hmm. sometimes
lasers, microwave, all sorts of things. Tempest is
CIA.
It's an old system.
Yeah, CIA headquarters is like that too. It's double walled, double windowed too, with noise in between the windows piped in.
As a humorous aside to all this, that's why. That's why aliens are always seen around trailer parks because they can't read the humans inside the metal trailer.
they think, Carlos, they think those are the real skiffs where we're keeping all our secrets.
That's right. That's why I live in an Airstream.
Cool.
Damn aliens. Stay out of my head.
Yeah, either that or it's everybody's living in an orgone box.
It works. You know, there's a lot of things that there's a lot of they built steam engines and other things like that, and they didn't know exactly how they worked completely. They just knew that it worked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things we have a certain level of scientific. You know, science and technology goes to a certain level.
Right.
And when we have it as a practical, where it's very practical and very cheap to produce and stuff like that, the development sort of just stagnates and staggers there, and we don't go any further. I mean, we've had, nuclear power plants since the 30s, but the technology... You know, the actual amount of energy we're harnessing off that nuclear energy is very, very small. You know, it's basically how can we heat water with it to make steam? And we know that's a very practical application for it, but it seems to me that given the amount of radiation that's coming off this stuff, that we should be able to find some way to harness it more efficiently, I don't know if it's our imagination.
Well, I don't think anybody's invented a way to take that the energy that's being released other than the heat energy and do anything with it. And the only thing we can do with heat energy is to run very inefficient but very easily buildable steam turbines.
Yeah, I agree with that, Greg.
As I say recently, that's my present bullshit explanation for that.
I agree with that, but it just seems to me that it's not so much the invention, but it seems to me that we haven't had the imagination, not so much invention. I think invention is, what did someone say? 1% or 10% imagination, 90% perspiration.
Yep. Inspiration, yeah.
And I think we're that 10% imagination level. We haven't expanded upon that. It's really interesting to note that back during the 60s and 70s, our basic what we're doing right now, talking over the internet and talking through. Basically, Star Trek communicators, right?
Yeah.
we had all that came about because a lot of people were basically dropping acid and doing mind-altering stuff, and it seems to me that every and all that stuff that was happening with both the military, you were talking about how all the research into psychic research and paranormal research dissipated back in the 80s, largely, I think, because of the political climate. The 60s and 70s had an entirely different political climate than the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s. It's just Nick Redfern, Nick's book about the Pentagon basically thinking that aliens were demons. I can't remember the name of the title. I think a lot of that, a lot of what's happened over the last 30 years is because a different political climate came into being within the Pentagon, within the government itself, as a reaction to what happened during the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, that could be. I think the creativity is still there. When I started working again last year, I got a subscription for my dad to Nature. And as a consequence, I get the online version. I can read on my iPad. I can just download and you understand how Ed Dames used to come up with all his predictions. He would read this stuff and say, oh, scientists are going to whatever. But then I read the stuff in there. There's, something new in there every month about, DNA, and we've photographed DNA now. Now we've photographed an actual atom or the shadow of one, or newest developments in quantum computing, which makes it seem it's right around the corner. All this stuff is there. I think the creativity is still there, but I think people are so overloaded with amazing shit that this kind of stuff is not really worth their while, in the larger society, worth their while to care about until it becomes something where, I can hold this quantum computer in my hand and I can access anything and it has unlimited computing power and all this. Then that becomes amazing to people. But that gets leaked out a lot slower than it used to. Partially from what you said, Carlos, I think, and Walter wanted to speak. I'm sorry.
I have two points.
You might want to use that microphone instead, I guess.
Sorry, Walter. And you can take that smelly thing off of there. Ew. Okay, there you go. What happened?
It's like taking a dirty condom off some other guy.
Good, he laughed. You could hear that. Did everybody hear that? I want you to get the benefit of it. I have two
Unlike
points.
Some shows where people tell jokes and they're not funny.
That's right. Here's the thing. I'm glad you brought up Nature magazine because it kind
not including
of,
me.
It ties in with where I was going to go. The way I see it, there's two reasons why, Carlos, we've had this. Two reasons have stymied our amazing technological
creativity.
Development and creativity. Number one, the rise of environmentalism. I'm not going to go off on a rant, but I reject the environmental religion. I the whole human caused global warming thing as a crisis is bullshit in my opinion. And I think all that is a political tool used to stymie, the Western, free market capitalist, nations. And that's where I'll leave it there. That has stymied our technological advancement and development that we were talking about. The other thing is, the end of our, really the screeching halt that's been brought to our manned space exploration. Because if we had a field in which we could apply all this amazing stuff, that would keep up with the progress, the continued progress of it, it wouldn't be a problem because we'd be out there. I mean, this is why I'm an advocate of commercial space exploration. Uncle Sam and the governments get the hell out of the way and let the people and the companies start going out into space. And you will see this same rapid advancement and technological...
They are going out in space, Walter. They're building a spaceport in New Mexico.
They are now, but we've spent damn near two decades where they weren't.
They didn't want competition.
For two decades, it was still in the hands of, never a straight answer, NASA. And, you know, I'm sorry. I'm one of those that's grossly disappointed in how little we've done since Apollo, since the development of the shuttle with our manned space program. And we've been sidetracked with a bunch of crap and, also the environmentalist nonsense. That's how I see. Those are the two things I see, Carlos, that have contributed to what you were talking about.
Well, I on the environmental thing, that's the entire environmental movement, in my humble opinion, has been totally co-opted by the corporate. It's, we don't live in a free market capitalism in the Western side. We have crony corporatism, and they basically have co-opted the environmental movement completely. It's dead in the water because they write all the legislation.
Well, but what I was saying is the environmental movement was, you know, greatly bullshit to begin with. It was a tool used for political agenda, specifically socialist political agenda originally.
I wouldn't say that completely, but I tend to take the right-wing conspiracy theorist view of everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you look behind the environmental movement, you'll find very rich people funding it.
Of course.
Because they have money. It's to protect their money.
In the former Soviet Union, and if you look close enough at, you know, the big gurus in China, you've always got, you know, the elite level of people that have all, you know, the haves. Even in the, of course, I agree with you. You're right. There are rich people behind it. I mean, there's rich people openly behind it. But what I'm saying, and don't get me wrong, I'm not against like conserving national parks and stuff. I mean, I love that. I'm all for that. I'm talking about the extreme environmentalism that just where they want us to go back to, you know, some agrarian, you know, 1801 type of world, which, you know, fine, you go back to that. If that's, I'm not talking about you, Carlos. I'm speaking rhetorically.
Well, that's, you know, also fanatics and not the main part of the
But unfortunately, the crazies are in control of the asylum in many regards. Look at Al Gore. The guy's a loon with this shit.
I think he's I don't particularly care for the man because he's a hypocrite. But
what? You mean he's a politician and he's a hypocrite? Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's just shocking. I'm shocked. I say you're shocked.
I'm not saying too much because I've got a pounding headache from this allergy, but you two keep going. I may agree or disagree with whatever you're saying, but I usually will take a middle view of things, meaning that my little piece here is that I don't think the environmental movement is a movement towards socialism or anything like that. I think
it's a tool of socialism.
It can be used as a tool, yes.
It has been used as a tool.
Yeah. For instance, I voted against the genetic manipulated food labeling thing, and people may be surprised that I did that. But I talked to my dad about it, and he changed my mind.
Yeah.
Through reasoned, through reason and talking things through and saying, well, look what it says, look what they're doing. How far does this go? What is included in it? What is the upshot of? And he says they may need to label it, but this is the wrong way to go about it. So I'm voting against it. He basically convinced me. Yes, I agree with the idea of it, but I don't agree with the implementation.
With the execution. And Carlos, I'm not summarily.
For those of you not in California, it was a California ballot thing.
I want to state here, though, for the record, that if you were to go issue by issue with environmental things and get into the details of it, you'd probably be surprised that I'd go, yeah, I'm for that. Yeah, I agree with that. I'm talking about beyond what I consider to be reasonable. Okay, like Greg said, the extremists. And
Earth First and Earth Liberation Front and all that. Those guys are just.
Yeah, I don't believe that the planet is a sentient being. I'm sorry, to me that's hoo ha. Now, does that mean that? But I do think the planet is alive with biological systems in itself. But I don't believe that the planet itself is this sentient being with a consciousness and a personality.
Well, it may be, but not in the way that we think it is.
I just don't think it is.
Ah, this is where something gets really, really. This is where we're getting into that Mac Tony's area of transhumanism,
yes,
and stuff like that. Because I saw a very interesting Nova Science Now thing on Infex Wednesday night, and what was really interesting is basically they make decisions. Our brains work exactly like the hive mind of bees, except that we understand that we're an individual, whereas the individual, mm-hmm. The bees probably don't understand it. But right. The decision-making process is the same. That leads to, if you look at every computer other than the one I'm holding in my hand, every computer that's connected to the electrical grid is grounded to the Earth. So that means the billions of computers that are connected to the electrical grid with the billions of CPUs, which are basically nervous ganglia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I almost guarantee you, it just seems to me, this is just me probably just imagining things more than likely, but it seems to me that the Earth has manifested a brain called the internet, and it is taking, it is sensing, it is doing everything a living organism does, and we are just basically
a host.
Right now we're a
host.
A host, or I would not necessarily a host, as much as a
workstation.
Like bees and pollen, right? We're spreading the pollen for the little for the flowers, you know, we're taking bits of information and moving it around and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening right now. Well, I mean, it's one of those really, is the planet sentient or not? Are we sentient? Suppose the planet is sentient. Mm-hmm. Are we as sentient as it, or is it it is so manifestly greater a sentient than we are, and considering the size of the universe, and the size of the universe, the size of galaxies, could they be sentient?
Yeah, well, you can say
so sentient that we can't even understand the level of sentience.
Yeah, well, maybe it just exists, too. I mean, maybe existence is... like it's like those giant fungi or whatever that is, those aspens that grow. It's like, well, it's there. I don't know if it makes any decisions, but it's there.
Two things on that, Carlos. Two things in response to that. Number one, I think the Earth is just a machine. It's a machine. It is a biological, geological, you know, the various systems we have in nature. It is a machine. It is just here. It's for us to inhabit for a time. It produces resources that we are supposed to just simply use. And yes, when we do use up this planet, we go on to the next one. I think that's the order of things. And now that I brought up order, I think the similarity you're seeing between an internet and the Earth as such has described the way we're discussing it. I think, you know, nature, you know, loves patterns. And I think that because we're part of nature and the Earth is part of, you know, the physical nature, that we just happen to both, you know, gravitate towards patterns. And I think this, this connection you made between, you know, that the Earth has created, say, an internet and we're just the host or the worker bees in it, I think it's just more of a working facsimile of the Earth system, the grid and such, that we would naturally apply to a grid of our creation. So I think it's just an accident of our natural design.
What I see here is my people, positions. What I see here is, and myself included doing it, is people using what their belief system is to explain what they think is going on. And no, to me, whenever I hear people say, I think this was going on, it's like everything in your life has led up to that, to your opinion. You know what I mean? It might be
absolutely
right. And I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong, but I don't totally agree with either of you, but I agree with you on some things. The only thing I could think the whole time that Walter was saying this, and I'm not putting him down saying he's wrong, was that this Alan Watts thing I heard a long time about rocks. And maybe it is that the natural order of rocks is that eventually they start moving around. And that just happens a lot of the time. Depending on where you are and what the conditions are, the rocks will eventually turn into sentient things moving around and move on from there.
Hmm.
All matter decays. All matter goes from the heaviest elements back to the lightest elements.
Yeah. Entropy?
Eventually.
Yeah.
And vice. It takes the compression of neutron stars to create all the atoms, the heavier atoms that exist.
Yeah, but you know what's so more infinitely interesting than matter? Is what we are on the esoteric
from it.
Or the spiritual
what arises
level.
Out of it?
Yeah, our consciousness. That's what we are on as above, so below level. I can't think of the right word.
But. Yeah. Well, what's the rock consciousness? It just wants to organize into a more.
Yeah.
That's not even a Hindu thing. It wants to organize into a way that it can experience itself. It's also a Christian idea.
And the physical state is merely just useful. And ultimately, the physical state is just useful in the experience of the mind and the consciousness.
Yeah.
The importance, the higher importance, is the mind and the consciousness and what's going on beyond the physical. And when you pull the veil away while you're in the physical to see the beyond, I think that makes it even more interesting. To me, these are the more interesting things, as fascinating as the physical can be.
Oh wow, we got rid of two listeners. That's good.
I wonder if it was me or. I hate that Walter. He sounds like a 50s science fiction guy.
You never know. Some people have to get up and go to work tomorrow.
That's true. That's true. It could be the East Coast listener.
Yeah.
So I don't know if more people want to call in. I have no idea.
They should Facebook you. Facebook message you.
Well, not everybody that listens is a Facebook friend. So. I don't think. I mean, I'm not like a lot of the hosts of these things where I go out and do all this publicity and really try to get in touch with people. It's almost like an accident when somebody I know becomes, it's like, oh yeah, that dude. Yeah, I remember him. Yeah, okay, I'll just hit yes. Because if I said yes to everybody that was requesting my thing on Facebook, I'd have like 2,000 Facebook friends. And I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes you want to let your hair down a little bit, and you only want to do that around certain people because invariably there is going to be somebody who takes offense at a totally innocuous thing, or like in my case, they don't get my dry sense of humor sometimes. So they get all, you know, pissy about, and I just want to avoid that. So unless I know the person or I have a reason to want them on my friends list, I generally don't, you know, but sometimes I've switched profiles and I just don't get people I want added back. And that's just an oversight. So if anybody who used to be on my friends list who, you know.
Or sometimes you just have a violent, like Skylar Alfergren and me had a violent disagreement about horses and.
Horses?
Yeah, it was a long story. You know, just like Secret Sun guy. You know, I can't remember his name. He kicked me off of his Facebook following page. And okay, you know.
So yeah, what? I won't get into it with people on Facebook. I really, really, really try to avoid the confrontations because they're just, it's a bunch of negative energy. It causes anxiety and aggravation.
Well, that,
and
you know what?
It's unnecessary.
You know what these confrontations are? Are people basically thinking at some point they're going to bring you around to their way of thinking.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do that, and I'm not going to do it to somebody else. If somebody has their emotions drop out of it, then I realize I might be learning something from them. Other than that,
this was just after Skylar broke up with her, why she's out back in Connecticut or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So this happened year. I think it was almost a year ago.
Oh, okay.
So it was, but it was funny. You should mention her earlier.
Yeah, I have something queued up here, which is extremely politically incorrect.
Oh, I love it.
Okay.
And I want to play it. So do you want to give way to see if somebody else wants to call in, or do you want to stay on, Carlos?
No, I'll hang up and go listen inside.
Okay, I didn't mean to kick you off, but it was a call-in show. I was like, oh, let's see if somebody else will call in.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling in, Carlos. It's just like...
Yeah, it's good to hear from you.
I love having you listener call-ins. I think I ought to do it more often because it gets my brain going again. It makes me happy.
Okay, cool.
All right, thanks, Carlos.
Later.
All right. Sniffle, sniffle. I listened to this. I heard this at work. When people leave from work, I'm by myself generally, so I put on Pandora and I listen to comedy stuff usually.
Yeah.
And I heard this the other day, and it made me pee my pants. I walked into another room, and I put my head up against the wall. I kept laughing for about a minute with tears coming out of my eyes.
Okay.
This is comedian Aziz Ansari, if you know who he is. Indian extraction, India, born here, obviously. So this is his joke about texting.
I actually had a gay friend of mine get real mad at me because of a text message I sent him. And I looked at my phone and I realized it wasn't my fault. It was my phone's fault. They have that feature on there called Smart Type, where you type things and it guesses what you're typing. But sometimes it guesses wrong. Like you'll type in gay, it'll guess have. Text get misinterpreted. That's what happened to me. What I was trying to send my gay friend Greg was a text that said, hey, Greg, don't think I can come to the bar. Tired. Gonna hit the hey. That's what I was trying to send. But what Smart Type decided to send was, hey, Greg, don't think I can come to the bar. Tired. Gonna hit the hey, you faggot. Fuck you. Whoa, 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 whoa. Smart Type, that ain't what I was trying to say. Why get no homophobic on me? Greg's gonna get pissed off about that text.
Very politically incorrect, and people probably get mad. And say, wouldn't you play that for? That's not very nice.
But he's so right. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me, butt buddy?
Seriously, can you hear me?
Yes, it's working.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry about that.
Because he's so right. I hate that Smart Type thing. I always turn that off.
Yeah, me too. But it just—it's like, you know, that's perfect comedy. You just took this thing and just.
I know that was good. That was good. That was really good.
That really makes me laugh. And here's something. One more thing here. If people want to call in, it's 213-252-0998. Here's something that is not dirty in the least, and I really enjoy it. We were in Albuquerque, Sigrid and I, on this last trip, and we were listening to. We don't have Sirius satellite in our car, but we had it in the car that we rented, and we left it on the comedy station, or I did for a while. And this song by Alan Sherman came up. He's the Hello Mother, Hello Fada guy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He did so many other things that people don't know about. This one's called One Hippopotami, which is, it's just, I was laughing. Copious tears were coming out when I heard this. Is it working? Oh, wrong one. Let's try this one. Ouch. Sorry, guys.
One hippopotami cannot get on a bus. Because one hippopotami is two hippopotamus. And if you have two goose, that makes one geese. A pair of mouse is mice. A pair of moose is meese. A paranoia is a bunch of mental blocks. And when Ben Casey meets Kildare, that's called a paradox. When two minks fall in love with all their heart and soul, you'll find the plural of two minks is one mink stole. Thank you.
pairs and plurals are so different, bless my soul. Has it ever occurred to you that the plural of half is whole? A bunch of tooth is teeth. A group of foot is feet. And two canaries make a pair. They call it a parakeet. A paramecium is not a pair. A parallelogram is just a crazy square. Nobody knows just what a paraphernalia is, and what is half a pair of scissors? It's a single sizz with someone you adore. If you should find romance, you'll pant and pant once more. And that's a pair of pants.
Yeah, see, you can play that for children.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
So you've given balance, you know, you did the one. And
well, it's two things that have made me laugh recently, and I like to share that with people listening to the show.
Paradox. That was the one that got me.
Yeah, I know. When Ben Casey meets Kildare, they call that a paradox. A lot of people don't get that because they're
too young.
Too young. I'm too young to get that, but I know who Ben Casey and Dr. Kildare were because of
the reruns
just being,
when we were kids.
I didn't even watch the reruns. It just somehow entered my consciousness.
I remember specifically the Ben Casey show.
Yeah.
And then I remember when Richard Chamberlain was on Hallmark movies, my mom and dad would say, oh, he was Dr. Kildare.
Right.
So.
And then you've somehow I found out because I used to watch Warner Brothers cartoons, and one of the cartoons, there was Bugs Bunny played a doctor called Dr. Kill Patient. I was like, what does that come from? And somehow, I guess I looked it up and found out about Dr. Kildare. This would be before internet or anything, so you had to kind of...
Are the Bugs Bunny in drag cartoons like considered politically incorrect? Because they're hard to find. I've tried to look them up on YouTube to show them to people.
I don't think so.
Because he's
why
hilarious
when he does.
Why is it
politically incorrect to have him running around in drag?
Because they, you know,
transvestite
that's the,
Bugs.
You know, anti-gay humor kind of stuff, which it's hilarious when Bugs is in drag. It's usually just little moments, but
if that's anti-gay humor, then so is
I'm asking
RuPaul.
I'm asking if because it's just
no,
it's,
I don't
it's
think
hard
so.
To find.
They're about to, or they have released all the quote unquote politically incorrect, you know, Cole White and the Seven Dwarves and Bugs Bunny Nip the Nips and all that other stuff. That's been released.
On an official DVD.
I think so. Either should be soon or has been recently.
Yeah, because you can find that stuff, the racial stuff, on YouTube.
Yeah,
you know, there was the Little Red Riding Hood one.
Yes,
and you know, of course, then all the World War II stuff with the Japanese guys. But the Superman one, Japatours, is still included on those collections.
I have not seen that one.
And that they've got the, you know, the pointy mustaches, the eyeglasses, and the buck teeth imagery. And,
yeah, well, that's... You that's know,
and
that's
just the fact that
the
it's called Japatours.
Yeah. There's a... when I was working about 10 years ago at a facility, about every week UCLA Film Archive would come in and transfer something.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing they transferred was a film produced right after, like, Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called Little Tokyo. And it was basically about Japanese people here spying for the Japanese. And there were, like, shots of guys coming up out of bushes with cameras at the airport and taking a picture. Which, apparently... didn't happen that much. Although people say, well, that never happened. Well, actually, I think it did happen in a very few cases, but like out of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of
Right. Yeah.
And you know, it was basically pure, and those people went and fought in the 442nd and really kicked ass and all that. But anyway, I think the point I'm getting at here is the racial stereotypes thing is I think you agree with me. It should be out there.
Yeah.
It should be exposed. And when you hear somebody that they're coming from a place of actual racism, you can tell.
Yeah. And it exposes that racism.
Unless you're an idiot.
unfortunately, there's idiots. But I think people calm down.
Or if
down,
you don't, you know, yeah, the thing is that you shouldn't assume immediately.
Yeah, I think...
Wait till a person says a couple more things.
Yeah, calm down and let people use these words and stuff like that, because then you know their true colors.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you know, it's like, oh, okay, now I know where you're coming from.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Whereas if you make everybody afraid to say what they really think, then the knuckleheads can go under the radar.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll be making, you know, we say things at work, and like, there's a guy that works with us that's gay, and sometimes we'll say fag this or fag that, and he'll come in and hear us.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't give a shit. And I asked him once, I said, am I bothering you? No, what do I care? I know who you guys.
The
time it's funny to me, too, so don't worry about it.
Here's what I learned, particularly like living back east, you know, the fag word, often when it's used, it's by you know, guys like, you know, us, you know, the straight guy world or whatever. It's less of a gay connotation.
No, it's become more of a
pussy.
Yeah,
we're not saying you're being a gay person, because some of the toughest, least pussy people on earth you'd ever meet happen to be gay. it's less of a connotation anti-gay person is we use that now. Oh, you're a pussy.
Yeah.
So the word has changed, and I kind of wish that they would, you know, quit doing this liberal Gestapo thing on it and let it change, because I think most people understand.
Yeah,
you know that it's
yeah. Would those at least, would that thing I just played now be less funny if people were relaxed about the word? The thing about the texting.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're right. Yeah. Good point.
Maybe that edge needs to be there.
That
push and pull.
Oh, you're saying, but being open about it, allow the edges to be there. You know, that's a good point. In society, that's a good metaphor. In society, we're treating everyone like children, where, you know, don't run with the scissors or watch the pointed sharp objects. We're trying to take the pointed sharp object out of everything in existence,
right,
so that nobody gets their little feelings hurt. Basically, we're creating a civilization of pussies, and it's getting to be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And
no,
we just need more people to
argument.
Say what I'm saying.
Yeah, I had my friend Joe Osterly on here, and all we did one of the shows is just play comedy stuff.
Weird California guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's done stand-up. He's written humor. And we just had a whole show on humor and why it was funny. We had racial jokes. We had cancer jokes. We had, you know, what else? A lot of sacred cows in there. But the fact that they were sacred cows made them twice as funny, because you have to keep poking those things.
You do. You know.
So before they get too high and mighty, this is an old idea, and a lot of people listening to the show probably either know it or agree with me or whatever. But it's I feel the same way about any of the other subjects we're talking about here. There's, you know, nothing's sacred here. Everything's open.
Well,
for discussion.
it's the phenomenon with, at what point do you quit? I say the product of being accepting and tolerant of different people is ultimately you've got to stop treating them like a special interest. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like you know, you meet a lot of, you know, like physically handicapped folks that they say, no, don't treat me like I'm, you know, you got to walk on eggshells with me. I'd rather be capable. In fact, Carlos Mencia talks about this, you know, in a much more funny way than I do, where he says, you know, the handicapped guys are like, no, don't treat me like I'm some type of wimp that needs to be, you know, just I'd rather be treated like a regular guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever group it is, the more accepting, the more tolerant, the more loving or whatever you want to say towards a particular group, really, ultimately, the less you should be treating them with kid gloves.
Right.
They're part of the gang.
I've told you about that friend of mine. I had two friends go through cancer treatments and survived it. No one likes a cancer joke better than a cancer patient. And I found that out because they're real good friends of mine, and I wouldn't have done this in mixed company. I told this story before. I told that One friend of mine said, oh, I just went for a ride in a glider. And I said, really? Well, how much was that? He goes, oh, they just gave me a ride because they saw me there. It's like, what? Well, how did you get that? You know, I don't see any blonde hair and big tits on you. How'd you get a free ride? How'd you get a free ride in a glider? And he said, well, because I told him they asked me what was going on with me, and I told him I was in chemo and all that, and said, oh, let's just come take a ride. I said, Glenn, can I get some cancer? I want to ride like
that. Oh.
And he thought, and another friend with us just looked at me and went, oh.
You can't say that. Because yeah, he laughed probably.
And he laughed his ass off.
I
said it in kind of a whiny voice. I want some kids. That's what I said.
You know what I think? I think there's a lot of people out in society that are fed up with the namby-pambyism, but they just don't want to get into a big argument about it.
Right.
It's
just not. You know, most of the time it's not worth it. It's not worth with a fanatic of any stripe to just get it, to get into it, because nothing's going to happen. You're just going to have
and
a bunch of people mad.
And the fanatics on both ends of the spectrum, you know, they scream the loudest. And yeah. They're the voices that are constantly heard.
Well, yeah, that's the idea.
Thus, the excluded metal.
The craziest person in the room is the one that everybody hears, because they control the conversation, because they're screaming
the
whole time.
Yeah, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Yeah. That's their
gets
philosophy.
Gets your ear or whatever.
And, you know, so there you go. So there you go. How many listeners did we end up with?
I don't know. How many we chase away here? We chased away one more. It went up and down. It doesn't really matter. I wanted to, if this show wanted to be popular, I wouldn't want to do it.
Well, remember, for those of you who will be in the Inland Empire,
if it's popular. Great.
2 weeks from tonight.
Oh, here comes the ad again.
The premiere of my silent film Hell's Bells, which you will see the exclusive debut of what will be the official trailer for my new movie that I've started filming already, titled Chthonic. And it's going to be fun. We're going to have a red carpet arrival of my stars. We're going to show trailers by other young filmmakers in Southern California. We're going to show my feature film. You can get dinner with the movie if you like. And then afterwards, we're going to have a Q&A.
The movie will come have dinner with you?
You can have dinner with the movie, at the movie. Gourmet cook, too, by the way. This is good stuff.
And I saw this. It's like, well, we're going to get dinner with your movie. How'd that happen?
It's at the Fox Theater and Events Center in Redlands, the theater that opened in 1928 with a Laurel and Hardy movie. You know, this has got a historical theater, a beautiful old theater that's been restored.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll get to see my film, my silent film, Hell's Bells. So 2 weeks from tonight, November 25th, you know, 7 p.m., 6 if you're getting the dinner.
I think I want the dinner. And we'll be back
and
2 days before that, Walter.
Let me give them the website, as a matter of fact.
Yes, please do. Radio Mysterioso will be back in 2 weeks after Walter gives his address out and the information for the... I've already got my tickets.
It is... You'll find it at... you can get tickets directly at LostAmazon9. That's the number 9.
Whoa.
Dot Eventbrite. That's EventBrite. .com / and the number... The number sign, I guess. Is that pound? The number sign. The tic-tac-toe thing.
Yes. No, pound, so for some reason, they call
that. So that's HTTP.
I hear pound,
you know,
I think the L with the line.
There's no www. It's just http://// LostAmazon9, the numeral 9, dot Eventbrite, bright spelled B-R-I-T-E, .com/#. The Fox Theater at 123 Cajon Street in Redlands, California, Sunday, November 25th. Hell's Bells. Written, produced, directed by me.
Who's
and,
me?
Walter Bosley.
Okay. I was going to try and find a play-out song to play us out. Also wanted to get my recording. My recorder didn't work, so I had to use the backup Kill Radio Studio recorder, which was working fine. It's because I would like to put this up. I did enjoy doing the show. My Son the Vampire. I played that last a couple weeks ago. Anyway, yes, thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks here. Maybe with Walter, maybe not. And
I'll be pretty busy that night. Will you? Back that night? That's the night.
Oh, that's right. Of course. We won't be here. So it's 2 weeks from or 3 weeks from tonight, I'll be back.
Yeah.
So I will try and put this show up before I leave, which is like Tuesday morning. So it'll be very... A very quick turnaround here. Who? Yeah, remember we played Frank Caliendo a couple weeks ago. Ooh, this is weird. Here's a I wanted to play this on the Halloween show, and it's not music. It's a seance at an airfield in Britain in the 1950s or 60s, calling up an airman who died in a plane crash. And it's funny because I was listening to it on the way here, and I was like, they're really putting words in the guy's mouth. But it sounds really creepy. I like it. Contacting dead airmen from the Occulte Stimmen, Occult Voices CD set. So let's play that one. That's a couple minutes long. Uh-oh. Oh, it takes a minute for it to... There we go. Here we go.
Save you, yes. Yes, we're here to save you. Tell us... I can hear you, yes. Tell us what happened. Tell us what happened. Fire? The plane caught fire? And it crashed? Yes. Where did it crash? Do you remember? Dear?
Near.
Near here? Church? Near the church?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. All right, we've got that.
Dusty Miller. Pat Sullivan.
Yes.
Jerry Arnold.
Help us. Help us. What can we do?
Well, you know, can you hear me? You know you've left the earth behind.